This episode of Cell and Gene, the podcast, is brought to you in partnership with Thermo Fisher Scientific. Thermo Fisher's cell therapy processing instruments are designed to help customers transition from process development to commercial manufacturing, utilized as standalone devices or integrated as part of a closed modular process. Thermo Fisher Scientific recommends Gibco CTS DynaSelect Magnetic Separation System, which is a next-gen cell isolation and activation instrument. Gibco CTS Xenon Electroporation System allows customers full control to optimize for a variety of cell types and payloads. And Gibco CTS Rotea Counterflow Centrifugation System is a closed cell processing system supporting a broad range of protocols for cell separation, washing, and concentration. Customers can rely on and streamline their drug development process with Applied Biosystems QualTrack qPCR and dPCR quality control tools for robust and reliable genetic analysis across various phases of drug development, supported by relevant, compliant documentation. Listeners, thanks for joining us on this episode of Cell and Gene, the podcast. I'm your host, Erin Harris, and my guest for this episode is Dr. Linda Marband, CEO and President of Capricore Therapeutics, a clinical stage biotech focused on the development of cell and exosome-based therapeutics for the treatment and prevention of serious diseases. So, Dr. Marband, thank you so much for being here today. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Erin. I'm really excited to be here.
Good. All right. So, I gave a brief description of Capricore Therapeutics, but I'd love to hear in your own words more detail about the company. So briefly explain to us Capricore Therapeutics and what your focus areas really are.
Yeah, so we at Capricore are focusing on really what we consider next-gen therapies to treat rare diseases. So our lead product is a cell therapy. It's an allogeneic, which means it's off-the-shelf cell product that is designed to combat the sort of dual enemies of pathology, inflammation and fibrosis. And these cells are not stem cells. We actually started the company around the concept that we thought we had discovered a stem cell to treat heart disease. But in fact, we ended up realizing that the cells were not stem cells, but actually basically carriers of exosomes that deliver messages between cells and therefore drive the positive biology that we see. The cells now are in a late stage clinical trial. It's called phase three. And a phase three means theoretically it's your last clinical trial before you can make something available to all people with the disease. And the disease that we're focusing on right now is called Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which is something that is an X-linked disorder. It means that it comes on the X chromosome and therefore is typically only expressed in boys and men because they have one X chromosome, whereas we women have two X chromosomes. So we, the women, are unfortunately carriers, but we usually don't know it till we have an impacted son. Duchenne muscular dystrophy is a muscle wasting disease. It means that these boys and young men lack the ability to make dystrophin. It's the largest and most important protein in the body for maintaining cell shape and durability. I liken it to the bumper of a car. It prevents damage to the mainframe of the car so that you can have the little bumps and bruises of daily life without really impacting the actual structure. Without dystrophin, the cells, just like a car without a bumper, sustain enough damage that they ultimately die. And when the kids try and replace them, they ultimately run out of the ability to do so. They lose the function of that muscle group. And it goes from sort of large muscles to small muscles, ultimately impacting the lungs, or not the lungs themselves, but the muscles in the chest that'll allow breathing, and the heart, and they typically die somewhere in their 20s. So it's a really terrible disease. I always say, you know, to anybody that has children, you know, it's like watching your children lose milestones every day of their lives rather than gain milestones. And some of the advocates will say when they go to bed at night, all they ask for is tomorrow, not worse. Please, tomorrow, not worse. And we have really fantastic clinical trial data in this terrible disease. We published it in a main journal called The Lancet last year, and we've used that to power through this late stage or pivotal clinical trial. Now, that's not all, folks, because our second product is in our pipeline called exosomes. So sort of in that long response, you heard me talk about the fact that we discovered that our cells were not stem cells, but they mediated their mechanism of action by exosomes. Now, what are exosomes? Exosomes are very tiny, nanometer size. So, you know, a millionth of a millionth of a millimeter. They are so tiny, but they carry messages between cells. And we can liken them to the words of cells. They tell cells what to do, how to respond to a situation that they're in, and they usually give them tools to do it. So it's kind of like a cellular toolbox. And we discovered that the exosomes were delivering these cellular tools to, for instance, the Duchenne muscular dystrophy patients by giving them things to fix their muscles, to help repair their muscles and reduce the impacts of the inflammation. So we decided, why would we stop with just the cells? Why don't we build on that and actually use the exosomes as a therapeutic? But what we quickly realized is that the exosomes isolated from the cells worked just as well as the cells, and the cells were doing a fine job. So why mess with what works? But we thought, why don't we actually capture the power of the exosomes to deliver messages inside cells and take advantage of that by engineering exosomes? So now we've developed another pipeline of products where we are working on taking exosomes from a standard cell line, not from our therapeutic cell line, and just engineering them. So we put things on the outside that tells them where to go or what to do. And when we put things on the inside, like everybody knows now, mRNAs, microRNAs, other kinds of nucleic acids that can be very safely and easily delivered inside the cell without too much hassle and theoretically without side effects. So those are the two product candidates. We have CAP-1002, it's the cell product for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And then we also have the exosome pipeline, which is coming along really nicely.
Great. Thank you for that detailed explanation of exactly what your company is working toward and working for. We'll break that down even more a little bit later on in the conversation. But speaking of your exosome program, I do want to kind of more broadly talk about exosomes in general before we really break down into your exosome program. Talk to us a little bit about where exosome science is today as a potential new class of therapeutics. You know, where are we in the entire program?
So that's a really great question, Erin, and I'm glad that you brought it up. So I liken exosomes to antibodies. So I started my career right around the time, 30 years ago or so, when antibodies were just coming onto the spectrum as a concept that we could actually change biology by using an antibody, blocking a natural base cellular response or causing a natural cellular response, depending upon how you are using the antibodies. And now they are the number one prescribed therapeutic in terms of revenue generation, I believe worldwide. And I think that like 8 of the top 10 therapeutics now that are, you know, for revenue generation are antibodies. Exosomes are probably where antibodies were, let's call it around 30 years ago, which is we've discovered their power. We understand that they are going to tackle a biologic problem that we as scientists have been wrestling with for a very long time, which is how to get something safely across the cell membrane, change protein translation, actually how proteins are made, and then ultimately drive biology that way, right? Because that's the crux of most disease, is if you can change how the cells make the proteins or don't make the proteins, depending upon which kind of direction you want to go, you could probably address, I don't know, somewhere around 80% of diseases. And that's off the top of my head, could be more or less. So where are we with exosomes? So exosomes were discovered in the 1990s, and considered to be the trash can of the cell. You know, people just sort of thought that's where the cell put junk and it went away. And then somewhere in the early 2000s, some smart scientists looked inside and realized that the contents inside, which were primarily nucleic acids, like RNA, DNA, and some proteins, just didn't look like trash. This didn't make sense. And so that exploded the industry, basically, where people on the academic side started looking at what is an exosome. And soon it became clear that they are how cells communicate. And I said a little bit ago, but I'll say again, because I think it's worth repeating, they are the words of cells. And what I can tell you sort of, again, in an anecdotal way is, my words today may change your behavior. You may do something different. You may think about something different, but it's not going to change you. You're going to leave this interview as Aaron, and I'm going to leave this interview as Linda. But in reality, that's what an exosome does as well. So an exosome delivers tools and information to cells that they can change their behavior, but the cell doesn't change. So there's not the genetic risk of causing something, causing cancer, or causing changes in how the gene is expressed, or even driving an immune response, because the exosome is benign. Give you perspective, if you've ever drank a glass of milk or drank a glass of beer, you're ingesting tons of exosomes. And if you've ever had or known anybody that had a blood transfusion, you're getting billions, if not trillions, of exosomes. And as you know, that's very safe. So we and others are now taking exosomes and trying to harness their power to use them as drug delivery systems. And you can put a small molecule inside, maybe reduce the effects of chemotherapy by doing that. Or you can put a nucleic acid inside and make a better vaccine, or drive a protein, the creation of a protein that can attenuate or prevent a disease. You can put proteins on the outside of the exosomes. I think of them like docking stations, where they can then land on a cell, deliver the contents inside, and do that in a very targeted way. So maybe in our future, we won't have medicines that have as many side effects, right? You know, sometimes you have to take something for back pain, but it makes you sleepy because it's going sort of to all the you know, connections and all the nerves and all the centers of your brain. If you can just make it go to the back and just cause, you know, reduce your back pain, you're obviously going to have a drug that's much more efficient at dealing with the issue.
Yeah, good. Thank you for that. That's an extremely beneficial breakdown of exactly what exosomes are, where we are at with them, and certainly our listeners have gleaned a lot of good information from that. I want to go back now to talk a little bit about Capricor's exosome program. You talked a little bit about it at the top of our call, the proprietary allogeneic cardiosphere derived cells, or the CDCs, and engineered exosomes. So both of which are in these various stages of preclinical development. Is that right?
So the CDCs, the exosomes made from CDCs, they are in early stage clinical development. We have an active IND, which is an investigational new drug application, and the potential to use that. We're not using those at the moment because, as I mentioned, and we can sort of, you know, dig deeper into the question, but I think it's really important for me to highlight. So sometimes we scientists have aha moments. And I was at a conference in Boston a few years ago when we were working on developing the CDC exosomes. And again, I realized that the cells were doing a fine job there. Why mess with what works? But what we really want to do are turn biologics into drug products, right? That we can quantify and qualify. We can tell you how much we're going to use and what effect we're going to get. I realized that if we took an aliquot of exosomes and we put something on the outside or put something on the inside, we could then drive exactly the biology that we wanted. We didn't have to take advantage of what nature gave us. We could make the choice of what we were going to do with that exosome. So that drove me to recruit a small but very efficient team of scientists with many years of experience in exosomes. We use a standard cell line now. It's called an HEK293 cell. You can buy it. And then we make exosomes in large quantities from that. I have an engineering team that's hard at work in San Diego making tons of these in these very industrial looking machines. And then we can take those and we can either put something on the outside or put something on the inside, or sometimes both, to drive the biology that we're looking for, whatever disease situation we're trying to address.
Gotcha. Okay. And I want to talk a little bit about the allogeneic significance of specifically your CAP1002. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, and specifically the allo
aspect of it?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really funny because industry and times move and things change rapidly. So when we first discovered the potential opportunity, and they were called CDCs then, cardiosphere derived cells, wasn't even CAP1002. We started off with an autologous cell. So we took patients that had had a large heart attack. We took a tiny piece of their heart and we took it back to the lab and we identified the cells of interest and then grew them up. And that became the foundation of our first clinical trial called Caduceus, which was also published in The Lancet. So we saw really great effects there in terms of reducing scar and also cardiac damage in adult patients with heart attacks. Well, ultimately, at that point, Big Pharma, which really ran biotech still, this was about, you know, a good 12, 13 years ago, the Times said, oh, there'll never be room for an autologous cell therapy. So we decided, okay, we're going to work on building an allogeneic or off-the-shelf product. We had the good fortune of recruiting Dr. Paul Terasaki, who recently passed away, but was one of the discoverers of HLA typing for transplantation, kidney transplantation. And he built that strategy at UCLA and then started a company called One Lambda. So he knew more about immunology and rejection and transplant biology than probably anybody on the planet at the time. And he advised us and he said, I don't think you're going to drive any type of dangerous rejection. Worst case scenario is the cells could be killed off, but that would then impact efficacy or the ability of your cells to do something good, but it would never impact safety. Go ahead and try it in people. So we did. And what we were able to find is that the cells do die off, but not before they release their exosomes, which is driving the mechanism of action. So it was a win-win. We could go to allogeneic. We use cells that are derived from transplant quality hearts that can't be used for technical reasons, which happens, believe it or not, about 40% of the time. We isolate out the cells of interest. They're cells that are in your body and mine right now, just at very small numbers. And then we develop proprietary methods to grow them up into relevant doses. And over the course of time, we were able to learn the appropriate dosing, the appropriate delivery, which now is intravenous IV, simple 45-minute procedure of 150 million cells four times a year. The kids come in, they watch a video, they go home. And it's very easy, and the clinical effects are actually remarkable, really remarkable. And I'm a scientist, as we didn't talk about that, but I have a PhD in science. And so nothing makes me more excited than data. And when you see a placebo-controlled clinical trial and you're seeing the people that you gave your therapy to doing well and the people that got the placebo not doing as well, you're like, okay, I believe that. And so this is exciting opportunity for an allogeneic cell therapy to move ahead.
Good. Excellent. I want to talk a little bit about the patient side of all of cell and gene therapy, but specifically as it applies to what you've done in your career and specifically now at Capricor. You know, earlier in our discussion, you were talking about young boys and young men who are living with DMD and, you know, their caregivers waking up every day and just hoping that it's not going to get worse. And as a parent of a son too, you know, just kind of, you know, I found myself having to collect myself through that part of our discussion. What has your experience been with young patients and the caregivers who are facing this degenerative disease with insufficient treatment options? Like, what are they coming to talk to you about? What are they bringing to the table? And how are you working with the actual patients and the patient community?
I mean, this is why I chose the career that I chose, you know, so many years ago. I wanted to make a difference in the lives of other human beings. And the concept of being able to do that is, it makes me, you know, emotional. What I can tell you is the hardest part and the most rewarding part of my job is dealing with the families, because they see that it's working. I have moms that are emailing me saying, my son can live in his dorm room because of CAP-1002. Please make sure he gets his next dose. And when we have an open label extension going on now, when they think that might be stopping, I start to get frantic emails. Please, please, we need this. You know, he's able to go to school or he's able to transfer to his bed. Just to give you context, as a mom of a son, these boys and young men are not looking for running a relay. These boys and young men are looking to roll over in bed. They're looking to brush their hair, to drink or brush their teeth. I mean, these are measures of independence, and they're teenage boys. So this is of extreme importance to them. So I say it's the most rewarding part of my job, because when I hear it's helping, that's all we ever want to do on this planet, right? Is make it a little bit better. The hard part is getting through the regulatory process where you have to, you know, make sure that FDA is comfortable with what you're doing so that they can get it approved. And sometimes that is a longer journey than our patients have. And so that's when it's the hard part, when I have people call me and say, please, can you treat my son? And if he doesn't fit the criteria of a clinical trial, I just say, you have to wait, you know, until we get approved. And that part's extremely hard. But I love, you know, there's nothing better than interacting with these boys and young men and their families. And I know a lot of them because I've been doing this for a while now.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Wonderful. Well, let's talk then about the HOPE clinical trial series, specifically HOPE-3. You know, DMD continues to be studied and many companies are and have been engaged in the development of therapies to treat it. All right, so broadly speaking, you know, what are the latest findings with regard to DMD? And what should Cell and Gene, the podcast listeners, you know, take away from this episode regarding the real potential of it? We talked a little bit about it just now. Anything else about that? And then talk us through the clinical trial series and where we are with that.
Yeah, so we are positioning CAP-1002 as an anchor therapy for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Look, it's a genetic disease. So you have a change in the gene program of a human being. There's a lot of downstream effects. There's some exciting developments in gene therapy that are looking like they're having some long-term beneficial effects. We're excited to see those move forward because that's addressing the dystrophin mutation. But until we can go inside an unborn child or a newly developed fetus and completely and 100% change the genetic impact of the disease, there's going to be sequelae associated with it. And in DMD, the sequelae of the breakdown of the protein are inflammation, fibrosis, which is scar generation, and ultimately wearing out of the stem cells that can make muscle cells. And CAP-1002 addresses all three of those pathologies, and it's through published mechanism of action studies, which you can look up, and I won't go into a lot of detail today. So we're excited about the space. We see ourselves partnering well with anything that's approved, but specifically the gene therapies that are coming along. In terms of our own clinical development, we have had really three positive clinical trials. HOPE-1, which was published in the Journal of Neurology, was our first clinical trial in the space. It was 25 patients, randomized 1-to-1, which means one patient got cells and one was observed with natural history. And that was published, as I said, in Neurology. Looked really promising for skeletal muscle and cardiac function improvement. That led to HOPE-2, recently published in 2022 in The Lancet. That was a 20-patient study, which showed really positive benefits in terms of skeletal muscle improvements in upper limbs. So our patients are primarily those later stage non-ambulant boys and young men looking to do those tasks I spoke about a few moments ago, like, you know, roll over in bed or grab a drink or brush their hair or even hug their moms, some of the moms say. And that's, you know, very positive. And then for me, what's, as I said a minute ago, I can't emphasize enough, I'm a scientist, you know, data drives me. And HOPE-2 open label extension has been the most extraordinary because we had placebo patients that went down during the clinical trial. They lost skeletal muscle function further during the gap phase, the time where nobody was getting any therapy. And then as soon as they went on CAP-1002, their disease process stabilized and they had about a 60% delay in the decline of the disease. And we presented that data recently on a Parent Project for Muscular Dystrophy webinar, as well as the World Muscle Society. So now HOPE-3 takes advantage of all of that positive data. It's a currently designed 68 patients, randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial. Same patients, later stage, primarily non-ambulant, kids over 10 years of age that can get into the trial four times a year, infusions. And that data should be, hopefully, all things being equal, we're looking to fully enroll by the end of the third quarter of 2023, and then moving on to data analysis over the next year, and looking for approval, hopefully, in early 25, if all goes well.
Oh, I certainly hope we can come back and have a part two of this podcast and talk about how the therapy has been approved and moving forward. That's wonderful. Thank you for all that information. Before we kind of wrap up the formal end of our discussion here, is there anything you want to leave Cell and Gene the podcast listeners with regarding your work with Duchenne muscular dystrophy patients?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting. And I do a fair number of these interviews and they always ask me that. And I guess it's always a time for self-reflection. What message do I want to leave with people? And I guess what I want to say is this is an incredibly exciting time in the development of therapeutics for people. I do believe it's game-changing. We really are starting to be able to address problems at a level, a cell gene molecular level that we couldn't even envision when I went to graduate school 30 years ago. And so I look forward to watching HOPE-3, you know, finish enrollment, seeing positive impact on the patients with Duchenne. And mostly I look forward to working closely with the regulators at FDA to try and get this done quickly. You know, I think as we move fast, FDA is trying hard to keep up with all of the changes and to make sure that they are doing a good job of keeping us safe while allowing only those things that work to be delivered to humans. So all things being equal, these are great times, you know, to be healthy and also to be developing therapeutics.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you. All right, well, we've reached the formal end of our episode. And at the end of all my episodes, I like to ask my guests a question to see who they are when they're not in the office of the lab. And so my question for you is, you know, what are your main hobbies or interests that you participate in or partake in when you're not at Capricor doing all the good work you're doing there?
Yeah, so I am a very outdoorsy person. So I hike. I like to go for a run after work to clear my head, but my real passion is skiing. So you will find me as often as possible flying down a hill at really ridiculous rates of speed. And I love that. So, and I also, you know, I'm a mom. I have 5 kids and 6 grandchildren. So I spend time with my family too.
That's wonderful. Do your children and or grandchildren ski with you?
Yes, everybody now, except for the babies.
Their day is coming, though, I'm sure.
They're coming. Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Where now? You're in Southern California, right?
We're in San Diego. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so where do you ski typically?
Well, my favorite place to ski is Aspen, Colorado, mm-hmm. but Mammoth Mountain. And my oldest daughter lives in Sun Valley, Idaho, so we ski there a lot.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, I hope we're out east, so if you come out this way, even though the weather hasn't been really cooperative for skiing out here, if you ever make your way out this way, let me know. There's plenty of slopes you don't want to miss.
Oh, good. Well, that'll be fun. I'll definitely be in touch.
Good. All right, listeners, that wraps up this episode of Cell and Gene, the podcast featuring Capricor Therapeutics, Dr. Linda Marban. Dr. Marban, thank you so much for your time today. This was very insightful. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It was wonderful. Thanks, Aaron. Have a great day.
Be sure to visit us at cellandgene.com, sign up for our newsletter, and subscribe to this podcast to stay up to date with all the cell and gene therapy related insight to help you perform your role even better. And we'll talk to you soon.